I want to talk tonight about the most difficult, the most misunderstood chapter in the Bible. I don't think it's the most difficult, but man has made it really, really difficult. The reason I'm doing it is the month of June, we're reading through the book of Matthew, and today is Matthew chapter 24. I don't know if you're caught up on your reading or not, but I just thought it would be good for us tonight to talk about the most, as far as I'm concerned, the most misunderstood chapter in all of the Bible. It's fundamental to understand this chapter because the principles taught in this chapter gives us an understanding of what God has done and how God has worked. And just to understand Matthew 24 is a key to understanding so many of the other verses in the Bible that might be difficult if we are not aware of everything that's taught in this. Now, here I need your help tonight in this lesson. I need you folks over in this section, sections 3 and 4 from the way that I look at it. I need you to turn to Mark chapter 13 because I need you to help me teach this lesson tonight. You'll understand what that's all about. Now, I want everybody in sections 1 and 2 to turn to Luke chapter 21. You'll understand what that is about later on. Now, it's all right for you to put a marker in Mark 13 if you're in the Luke group, or to put it if you're in the Mark group, to put a marker in Luke chapter 21. Because understanding the three times this event is recorded in the Bible and comparing what Matthew says and what people say that Matthew said, and comparing that with what Mark clearly says and what Luke clearly says in relationship to that. So let's look at the text itself. Look at those early verses in Matthew chapter 24. And there's a context of all of this, and I really wish I had time to look at the context of everything that's found in this chapter. But Jesus is departing out of the temple. And as he leaves the temple, the people tell him how beautiful this temple was. They call attention to the beauty of that temple. Wasn't it when Jesus said, "Destroy this temple and in 3 days I will raise it up"? They mocked him because they said this building has been being built for the last, I believe it's 46 years, all of these years. And they were talking about how beautiful this temple was. And so Jesus says, as he sees this, "I want to tell you something," and there is a verily that is attached to this, in at least in some of the context. In Matthew chapter 24, verse 2, he says, "Assuredly I say to you, that not one stone will be left upon another that shall not be thrown down." And the disciples' response, as he sat on the Mount of Olives, the disciples came to him privately saying, "Tell us, when will these things be?" I want you to hear that. There's a context in verse 3 that is tied directly to what he has said in verse 1 and verse 2. Verse 1 and 2, he's talking about the stones of the temple. And then the disciples came and said, "Lord, give us some insight. When will these things be?" And then they say it this way in Matthew chapter 24, verse 3, "Tell us the signs when these the signs of your coming and of the end of the world." It's important for you to hear what is stated here. Here's what is stated there. And I put the expression "the end of the world" in here in spite of the fact that the displayed on the screen is the New King James and doesn't have "the end of the world," but the old King James had that. And the reason this book is so misunderstood, or this chapter is the most misunderstood chapter in the Bible, is there's an expression that we use to refer to the end of time, and that's the end of the world. Do you believe that the end of the world is nigh? You start hearing about all of the things that are happening in the world, and then you say, "Well, didn't Jesus say this is exactly the way it's going to be before the end of the world?" And so they've taken that, and there's hundreds, maybe even, maybe the number is in thousands of books that have been written, and hundreds of thousands that have been sermons that have been preached by televangelists, and in the writings of booklets and tracts that say Jesus is ready to come back, be ready. All of the signs are fulfilled. And so they'll begin to talk about the signs that we're going to look at in the book of Matthew. Now then, I want us to look at the things that are stated in this beginning part of this. We may come back to some of the other verses a little bit later. Well, perhaps we ought to stay with that text. Let's stay with that text where he says, look, here are some of the things that are going to happen, and then we will come back and look at each of these things individually. But he says in verse 6, you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. See that you are not troubled, but all these things must come to pass. But the end is not yet. And so whenever he says, there are all of these signs that are there, but this matter of wars and rumors of wars, they're signs, but they're not signs of the immediate coming of these things, but the end is not yet. And so we need to understand this, that he will talk about in this same chapter whenever he says, these are just the beginnings. And I want you to underline maybe in Matthew chapter 6 the word beginning. And for when you get down in Matthew 24, underline the words the beginning of sorrow. And then look at verse 13 and 14 that says, and then the end will come. I want you to understand that the signs of Matthew 24 have a beginning that is identified by Jesus and has an end. And he says, and when this final sign is fulfilled, the end will come. Now, take just a moment and look at Mark's account of this. And those of you who are looking at Mark, you need to see, is there anything in Mark that is different from what is in Matthew? Because the Bible says, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. So if we want to know what transpired on that day, it's good to read Matthew's account, good to read Mark's account, and also to read Luke's account. In Mark's account, he goes out of the temple, and one of his disciples said to them, teacher, see what manner of stones and what buildings are here. And Jesus answered and said, do you not see these great buildings? You see the S on that? Before we were just talking about one building, and yet he talks about not just that one building that Matthew specifically mentions, but the other buildings. One stone shall not be left upon another. Now, I want you to pay particular attention in verse 3, because verse 3 of Mark's account has something that is not found in Matthew's account. Now, it's on the screen, and not all of the books from Mark and Luke will be placed on the screen, but I do this to encourage you to look at the differences. There are four men: Peter, Andrew, James, and John. Sometimes we think that this is Jesus' great sermon to the multitudes about the end of the world. But this is not a sermon about the end of the world provided to the multitudes as he saw the multitudes. He went up into a mountain. When he sat, his disciples came to him, and he opened his mouth and says, here are the signs of the end of the world. That's not what happened. Peter, Andrew, James, and John come and ask him this question. Tell us, when will these things be, and what will be the sign when all these things shall be fulfilled? Mark, folks, what questions did they ask? If you just had Mark's account, or if you just had Luke's account, we'll go to Luke's account in just a minute. When you read Mark's account, if the only copy of this discourse you had was Mark's account, and you never saw Matthew's account, or if the only account you had was Luke's account and you never saw Matthew and Mark's account, you may not understand everything that is involved. But Jesus, in Mark's account and Luke's account, answers the question. Now, Matthew, folks, here's the question. Not the signs of the end of the world. I want you to see that. And folks who have Luke's account, I want you to see that. That the question that is asked in Mark's account and the question that is asked in Luke's account is to give us signs, and the question that we are asking is, tell us, when will these things be? What things? They've just walked out of the temple. He's just talked about the destruction of that temple when not one stone would be left upon another. And they ask him the question, tell us, when will these things be? And what sign will there be when all of these things will be fulfilled? I've highlighted in the heading to Mark chapter 13 on the screen the word all. We want to ask you to give to us the sign of all of the things that you have said, not what televangelists have said. I want you to give us the signs of all of the things that must be fulfilled. Fulfilled has to do with a prophecy. And so Jesus in the temple, as he was leaving the temple, said, not one stone will be left upon another. And the disciples came and they asked two questions. When? And give us the signs so that we can know when all of these things are fulfilled. What's the question? The question is, signs when all of the things that Jesus spoke about in a prophetical way, not one stone being left upon another. Tell us when that's going to happen. Now, if you've got Mark's account, and we'll show this a little bit later in this lesson, and you just read these accounts, the signs that Mark gives are signs that are given in answer to the question, when will these things be, and when will all of this be fulfilled? And so Mark adds in the four disciples, and Mark adds in the fact that these are the question of all of these things, and when will all of these things be fulfilled? Now let's look at Luke's account. In Luke's account, tell us when these things are going to happen. In Luke chapter 21, verse 5, then, as some spoke of the temple, how it was adorned with beautiful stones and donations, he said, these things which you see, the days will come in which not one stone will be left upon another that shall not be thrown down. So they asked him, saying, Teacher, when will these things be, and what sign will they be when all of these things are about to happen? I want you to understand that if all you had was Mark's account and all you had was Luke's account, you would never ever think about these being signs of the end of the world. That's important. And so you've got Mark's account, you've got Luke's account, and you need to readily understand that Luke wrote and this book to a man called Theophilus, and he says, Theophilus, I want you to have the clearest understanding possible about Christianity and about Christ, and I'm going to put it down so that you'll be able to understand, so when you read it, you'll be able to comprehend these things. When Theophilus read, Theophilus would never see one of these signs as a sign of the end of the world. We'll come back and talk about the expression the end of the world a little bit later in this lesson. But I want you to understand that hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars have been made by televangelists who have stirred the world. Well, I've been preaching 60 years. And for 60 years, they said, the world is going to come to an end. Look at the Great Depression. The Lord said there'd be famines, and that's one of the signs. And so Jesus is about ready to come back. That's back right before I was born. What about World War II? What about all of the death and devastation there was? And what about the Holocaust? And what about all of the things that were happening? And in the 40s and 50s of the previous century, everybody's saying, the signs are right. Jesus is about ready to come back. He didn't come. And then all of a sudden you get to Vietnam, and then, you get to the Korean War, and then you get to Vietnam. And every time there's any time an earthquake or a tsunami anywhere on this earth, people jump to Matthew 24 and said, that's God's way of telling us the end of the world is about to happen. Well, let me suggest something. If when Mark is giving the account and says, these are a sign when not one stone will be left upon another, and these are a sign when these things that I have prophesied about these stones, when they're fulfilled, if they were fulfilled in the first century, then how on earth can you legitimately come to Matthew 24 and talk about what is going to happen and it's politically happening in America right now is a sign that the world is about ready to end. And so let's look at the signs. Jesus says in Matthew chapter 24, in verse 4 and 5, Jesus answered and said to them, take heed that no one deceive you, for many will come in my name saying, I am the Christ, and will deceive many. Now wait a minute. Is that a sign that the world is about to end? What does Mark say? Does Mark discuss this at all? Because Mark is not giving the signs of the end of the world. Mark is giving the signs when all of the things that Jesus spoke was going to happen. Does Mark mention the fact that there were going to be false Christ? Well, you begin looking at what Mark begins to say. And so in Mark chapter 13, verse 6, many will come in my name saying, I am he, and will deceive many. Wait a minute. That's a sign not of the end of the world, but a sign when all of the things Jesus prophesied about that temple would be fulfilled. Here's the avenue we're going down. If that sign was fulfilled before that temple was destroyed, then how on earth can they be a sign of something else? And so he says, and you will hear of wars and rumors of wars. That's in Matthew chapter 24. And so having said there will be false Christ and said there will be false Christ, isn't it remarkable that Matthew mentions false Christ? And Mark says, and those false Christs are evident of the end of the city of Jerusalem. Does Luke mention the false Christ? Well, absolutely. But Luke says these are a sign of the destruction of this temple. It's not a sign of the end of the world. It is a sign of that time. In Luke chapter 21, take heed that you be not deceived. Many will come in my name saying, I am he. The time is drawn near. Therefore, do not go after them. Jesus said to those individuals who were sitting at his feet, this is something that's going to happen. And it's not a sign of the end of the world. It's a sign of the time when the prophecies about that temple was going to be fulfilled. Now go to the matter of wars and rumors of wars. Does Mark mention wars and rumors of wars? You got to Mark 13 open? Is it there? Shake or nod. Yeah, it's there. It says there will be wars and rumors of wars. Look in the book of Luke. Does Luke say there will be wars and rumors of war? Yeah, Luke says that. Isn't that remarkable? But the wars and the rumors of wars were wars that were and signs of the fact in the beginning of the sorrow were signs of the fact that that temple was going to be destroyed. If you read Mark's account, if you read Luke's account, the only conclusion you can come to is that whenever there were wars and rumors of war, it was a sign given. Look at the personal pronoun. Look at what is stated in Mark's account and in Luke's account. Look at that pronoun that is there. Do you see a three-letter pronoun? Who will hear of wars? Peter, Andrew, James, and John. I want you to understand that those signs given in Matthew 24 and Mark 13 and Luke chapter 21 were wars that those first century disciples were going to hear of. Same thing in Matthew. Even having used the expression of the end of the world, he said, I'll give you a sign of the end of the world. We'll explain that later in this lesson. But the sign of the end of the world is a war that you men in the first century will hear of. I don't think they ever heard of the Second World War. I don't think they heard of the First World War. I don't think they ever heard of the Great Depression. I don't think they heard of the Korean War. I don't think that they've heard of the, Second World War, the Vietnam War. What about the Six-Day War when the Egyptians tried to come and to take Palestine? What about the wars in Iraq? And what about all of the terrorists? And what about 9/11? He says, these are things that you will hear. If Jesus had been talking about us, there is no way Jesus could have used that second person pronoun that says you. He would of necessity had to have said, and that generation, they'll be the ones that will hear of this. But he doesn't say that generation who happens to be alive in the 20th century, they will hear of wars. Talking about anybody other than those people in the first century. He could never have used the word you. The question is, you who? Peter, Andrew, James, and John. And that is so critically important for us to get. Now, does Luke talk about the wars and the rumors of wars? Oh, yeah. Wait a minute. There's another sign that was given in Matthew, and that is there will be famine and pestilences and earthquakes in various places. And then he says in verse 8, these are just the beginning of the sorrow. Does Mark mention these matters of the earthquake? And they may not follow it in the same sequence that is there. But he talks about the fact that these are the beginning of sorrow. That's in Mark's account. And a little bit later in Mark and Luke's account, he specifically mentions the matter of earthquakes. And he mentions the matter of the pestilences. Look in Luke chapter 21, verse 11. There will be great earthquakes in various places and famines and pestilences. And there will be fearful sights and great signs in heaven. That is remarkable. That is remarkable because the earthquakes that he's spoken of were things that are signs of the destruction of that temple. They asked, tell us when, not one stone of this temple, and give us signs so we'll know when it's going to happen. He says, here's a sign, earthquakes, famines, pestilences. I want you to understand that whenever he says in Luke's account, after mentioning these things, but before all of these things, they will lay their hands upon you and persecute you. Jesus tied to their lifetime these famine and earthquakes and pestilences. But wait a minute. If the false Christ and the wars and the rumors of wars and earthquakes and famines and pestilences were something that were signs, not of the end of the world. That's not the question in Mark. That's not the question in Luke. The question in Mark, the question is in Luke is, what you've given this prophecy about this temple, tell us signs so we'll know when it's about to happen. And he says, here they are, famines and earthquakes and pestilences. that was signs tell us when these things are going to happen. And the very fact that Jesus gave these signs to them, as well as that ongoing continuation of using that second person pronoun, and that is you. We take the matter of false Christ. We take the matter of wars and rumors of wars. We take the matter of famines and pestilences and earthquakes, and we say, Mark says these were things, and Luke says these were things that were going to happen as a sign preceding when not one stone would be left upon another. And then the next thing he says is that there will be those who will fall away, there will be persecutions, and there will be betrayal. You'll have to read down and skip a few verses in Mark, and the same thing in the book of Luke. But if you'll read the context, because Luke's account adds some things that Matthew does not have, but you'll begin to see that there was the very fact that there were false Christs that were going to come, and Jesus kept warning them, you be careful, you watch out, you beware. And then he talks about brothers or family members turning against other family members. But those are signs mentioned in Mark and Luke, and they're answering the question that has nothing at all to do with the end of the world. You know what that means? If all of the signs that people use in Matthew 24 are signs of the fact that Jesus is ready to come, you need to get ready, then Mark and Luke give us wrong information about these signs. Because Mark and Luke say these are signs that preceded the tearing down of that temple. And then he mentions again the matter of there being a false Christ that will arise, and there being lawlessness. And you read the account in Mark and Luke, and you'll see that in the context there is that very implication of the ungodliness that there would be. So the prevalence of ungodliness back in the 30s and 40s of the previous century, or the 50s or 60s or the 70s or the 80s or the 90s, where people get up and shout, the end is at hand, because all of the signs are ready. I want you to understand, these signs, according to Mark and Luke, are signs that have to do with the destruction of that temple. You know what you do? You take this approach that we've taken in this lesson tonight, and you remove every sign that is used by televangelists and those who are teaching people that Jesus is ready to come back, and you need to get ready because all of the signs are right. Those are not signs of the end of the world, as we use that. They were the signs when that temple was going to be destroyed. And the signs in Matthew 24 that are used by televangelists to say that the end is at hand are used by Mark and Luke, says, yes, but that end that you had in view was the end of this temple. But I want you to look at one other thing. And that is, whenever he says that here's the final sign. Here's the final sign. Go back to Matthew 24. It's stated most clearly in Matthew 24. Matthew 24, Jesus says to Peter, Andrew, James, and John in verse 13 and verse 14. He says, he who endures the end shall be saved. And this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world as a witness, and then the end will come. Jesus told those disciples, here is the final thing. You look at all of the signs, wars and rumors of war and famines and earthquakes and pestilences and false Christ and betrayal and all of the things that are transpiring. Whenever the gospel is preached in all the world, then the end will come. And so tell evangelists, saying, Jesus is ready to come back. Because I've been into the third world countries, I've been in the heart of Africa, and there are people there listening to, as the televangelist would say, or the telepreacher would say, if that's the word I want to use, the radio evangelist would say. And I've been over there, and they've got these radios, and they're hearing this very broadcast that I'm making right now. And now, for the first time in the history of all mankind, the gospel is ready to be preached to every creature under heaven. And if you want to be a part of it, send me your tithe. I want you to understand that what they're saying about the gospel being preached in all the world in our lifetime, and by the way, they've been saying that ever since they invented shortwave that would reach around the world. They've been saying that. It's not what Jesus was talking about. If I were going to put a note in my Bible, I'd put beside this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in all the world, Matthew 24:14. I'd put Colossians chapter 1, verse 23. When Paul wrote this letter of Colossians, prior to the destruction of that temple, but just a very few years before that Roman army came down and desecrated and destroyed that temple, Paul says, the gospel has been preached to every creature under heaven. Wait a minute. When that happened, then the end came. The final sign. All of these other signs have been fulfilled, and there's only one final sign. And when the gospel is preached to every creature under heaven, there is no other sign. And the gospel was preached to every creature under heaven, Colossians 1:23. Before the Roman army came down and destroyed that city. Colossians 1:6 says the same thing. Romans chapter 10 verse 18 says, the sound of the gospel has gone out to the ends of the world, ends of the earth. You need to understand that. Wait a minute. If the earthquakes and the famines and the wars and rumors of wars and pestilences and all of these things, false Christ and betrayal, these are the beginning of sorrow, and the end of the sorrow is when the gospel has been preached in all the world. That has to do with another end other than the end of all the world. It is rather ironic. It's rather ironic that no translation other than the King James has the expression end of the world. The word world is not there. We use the expression end of the world to talk about the second coming of Jesus. But before getting and emphasizing that totally, could I point out to you what was to be seen by you, Peter, Andrew, James, and John? In Matthew 24, verse 32, imagine you're Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and Jesus says, now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branches have already become tender and put forth leaves, you, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, know that it is near. So you, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, also, when you see all these things, know that it is near at the door. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. You want to see Mark's account? Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has been already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see these things happening, know that it is near at the doors. Surely I say unto you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Look at Luke's account. Then he spake to them a parable. Look at the fig tree. And let me pause long enough and point out that he says, and then look at the other trees. The televangelist would have you believe that that fig tree stands for the establishment of Israel in Palestine in 1948. That the fig tree is the Jewish nation. Wait a minute. You know what Mark says? Not just a fig tree. I'm not talking about a fig tree nation. I'm talking about a fig tree that puts out branches and leaves. So you know that summer is near. And he says, not just the fig tree, but every single tree on this earth. When you see the blooming of any of the trees on this earth, when it's already budding, you see and know yourself that summer is near. So you also, when you see all these things happening, know that the kingdom of God is near. This generation will by no means pass away till this takes place. The generation of those signs had to be the first century generation. There are no signs. Briefly and as rapidly as I can, let me point out to you there are some other considerations. And the tribulation, everybody's worried about this great tribulation, 7 years of tribulation, and they've got it all laid out in their millennial theories. But Jesus said in relationship to the tribulation, he says in Matthew chapter 24, in relationship to that generation, when you see in verse 15 the abomination of desolation spoken by Daniel the prophet standing in the holy place, whoever reads, let him understand. Let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let he who is on the housetop not go down to take anything out of his house. Let him who is in the field not go back to take his clothes. Woe to those who are pregnant in those days, those who have nursing babies in those days. And you pray that your flight be not in the winter time or on the Sabbath day, for then, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, then will be the worst tribulation there's ever been on this earth or ever will be. You pray, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, that whenever this worst times, famines and earthquakes and pestilences and all of these things, and then all the devastation that was brought about when that Roman army came and stood in the holy place, that's the temple. It's the worst tribulation there's ever been in the history of mankind. And you, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, need to be praying because it concerns you. It does not concern those who are in the 21st century. Why should Peter, Andrew, James, and John be praying that it be not on the winter time nor on the Sabbath day? Ironically, when I was in New Zealand, summer was the opposite of winter here. And if this has worldwide universe, you have everybody in the summer, in the southern hemisphere praying, God, please, please don't, well, let's put the folks in the northern hemisphere praying, God, please don't let it be in January and February. Let it be in June or July. Folks in the southern hemisphere, half of the hemispheres on this earth are praying, please, Lord, don't let it be in June or July. Let it be in January or February. How can that verse have universal application? Doesn't make sense. But it makes all of the sense whenever you see Jesus saying to those men, you need to be praying. The words you and your, we've tried to emphasize that. If I were you, I'd go to Luke's account and circle how many times the word you is found in Luke's account, Luke chapter 21. Some 20 times Jesus uses that second personal pronoun and says you and you and your, showing it has first century application. And then the repeated references to Jerusalem. When you see Jerusalem encompassed about with army, you who? And then he says, then let those in Judea don't flee into the city. There are references over and over again. When you see the desolation that's come, when you see Jerusalem encompassed about with armies, when you see it, Peter, Andrew, James, and John. That has nothing at all to do with us and in that very place. And then this matter of don't ever hire a lawyer. Don't ever hire a lawyer whenever you're arrested, because it will be given to you into that hour what you should fight, what you should speak. I find it amazingly interesting that the televangelists who say Matthew 24 is talking about our century, when they get in legal problems, what's the first thing they do? They hire legal counsel. Jesus said, don't do that. And they did not need it in the first century when the Holy Spirit gave them every word that they were to speak. And then we've already noticed that Jesus said, no one knows when heaven and earth will pass away. Matthew 24:35 says, heaven and earth will pass away. And the next verse says, but of that day and hour knows no man. Jesus said, there's no angel that knows that day or that hour. And Paul says, you cannot even know the time or the season, the general time when he's going to come back. Why? Because there are no signs. There are no signs. Well, what about the end of the world? May I point out to you that that word world there does not refer to the earth. It is the age. The age of Judaism is ending. And without that temple and without that priesthood, they, the disciples that there were there, fully understood that was the end of the age. If there's no Jewish temple, there's no Judaism. And Jesus has just said, this magnificent temple that is in the center of Judaism and its worship is going to be destroyed. And they said, tell us when that will be the end of the age. And the other thing is, the sign of thy coming. As though Jesus only used the word coming to refer to his second coming. On the screen, I've got two verses where Jesus, when he sent out the 12, said, before you preach to all of the house of Israel on that limited commission, the Son of Man will have come. That's first century. And Matthew chapter 16, verse 28 says that when the kingdom came, it was the Lord coming in His kingdom. He came on the day of Pentecost. I don't mean He literally came, and I'm not denying that there will be a literal second coming of Jesus. Hear me as I affirm that. There will be a time when the heavens will be open and Jesus will descend and He will come in the manner in which you've seen Him go. But Jesus Himself talked about comings of Himself other than the second coming. And so they said, Lord, tell us when there will be this announcement of You, this appearance of You. Because they thought when Judaism is destroyed, that will be the appearance of Jesus, the coming of Jesus. So much more that can be said, but that's why we have First Sunday night questions. And there are some other difficult verses in here, but that can be harmonized with everything that we've said tonight. Hope you've enjoyed this. It's the most misunderstood chapter, but it is in simplicity, if you'll look at Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and the word you. The only conclusion you can arrive with is that those signs were signs that Peter, Andrew, James, and John were given for something that was going to happen in their lifetime. And Jesus said in Matthew and in Mark and in Luke, in this generation, every one of these things will be fulfilled.